Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Season 4 of Typecast, Boston's new play podcast. I'm Darren Evans, the Managing Director of Boston Playwrights Theatre, the home for new plays in Boston. In this podcast series, we are diving deep into the new play ecosystem of Beantown, talking with playwrights, directors, actors, and theatre makers of all varieties about the process of bringing new plays into the world. We are kicking off our brand new season of Typecast by hearing from two playwrights, also starting off an all-new season, right here at BPT. Today we are joined by third-year playwriting MFA candidates at Boston University, Maggie Kernan and Tina Esper. Maggie and Tina are the playwrights of our first two new works this season, How to Not Save the World with Mr. Bezos and Soft Star, respectively. Our first guest today is Tina Esper. Tina is a first-generation American playwright of Lebanese, Brazilian, and Portuguese descent. Her work focuses on themes of dislocation, assimilation, and the pursuit of freedom, as well as telling the stories of aging women in America. Her play, Neighbor Jane, has been developed at both the 2022 Great Plains Theater Conference, the Workshop Theater Spring Intensive, and the Sewanee Writers Conference in 2021. Tina is currently working on the Jane trilogy, consisting of Neighbor Jane, its sequel, State of Maine, and its prequel, Soft Star, which will be staged at Boston Playwrights Theatre this fall. Welcome, Tina.
Hi, Darren. Hi, Maggie. Thank you for having me.
Yes, next up, Maggie Kernan. Maggie is a Boston-based playwright, director, performer, designer, educator, and scenic artist. She describes her work as lyrical, historical fiction, angsty dystopian thrillers, or naturalistic explorations of friendship and art. Her 10-minute plays have appeared all around Boston, most notably at the Boston Theater Marathon, Boston College's New Voices series, the Firehouse Center for the Arts New Work Festival, and the Open Theater Project Slam. Her full-length works include Ida Wally, Changing Lanes, The Misses, IDK What This Is, and her plays have been developed both on stage and online at Freshing Theater, Theater at First, Newton Theater Company, and Boston College. Maggie, welcome aboard.
Hi, Darren.
Thank you both for being here. To start off, I'm just wondering if you could both give us a two-sentence description of the plays that you have going up this fall at BPT so we have some context for the upcoming discussion. I'll start with you, Tina.
Soft Star is a family drama that focuses on a friendship that is doomed to failure. And so we get to take the ride and see everything that can go wrong in a friendship that dates back to middle school.
Very juicy. All right, Maggie, what about yours?
How to Not Save the World with Mr. Bezos takes place in a parallel now in which it is illegal to be a billionaire. And Jeffrey Bezos has agreed to give an interview to journalist Cherry Beaumont. And there's an onstage fact checker keeping them honest.
All right. Very intriguing. You are both right now simultaneously in rehearsal. So I want to talk a little bit. I want to get behind the scenes of that process, starting with where are things at with the writing? Are you still making changes to the plays? Are the scripts frozen? Like what's your process as a playwright right now? Go ahead, Maggie.
My rehearsal process started a week before Tina's did. So I'm about a week ahead. Today's off book day. Happy off book day, everyone. So that means that the actors will, in theory, not have scripts in hand today moving forward. My soft freeze date for the script is the 2nd, which I think is Saturday. But we're in micro edit world right now, which is such a wonderful place to be. After I feel like I did an overhaul weekly for the past month, and now we're in a space where it's like tweaking words, or this line isn't working anymore, cut that, like those kinds of things. Certainly things that the actors are able to handle beyond their off book date. But I see a designer run on Wednesday. And I think at this point in the rehearsal process, seeing the actors a little more comfortable with the script, with fewer changes coming in, is going to be very informative. And I look forward to learning something brand new and exciting that I've never seen before when I see the run on Wednesday.
Yes, so as Maggie said, I'm about 1 week behind Maggie's. And so we've had a couple of weeks of a pretty big overhaul. And I'm still listening to some scenes for the first time with actors, and we're blocking. And as my director, Bridget O'Leary, is blocking, I'm getting to see the text, live and how it feels, how I hear it with actors moving on stage. So we've been making some adjustments to the script. I think we're very close to transitioning to the micro edits, like you were saying, Maggie. And there's some relief, even though the play may change after this production, and that's always a possibility with playwrights. I feel that I want to get it to the point where it's only the small changes, so that I'm concerned about, making sure the actors are comfortable with what they have and that they can feel steady with the script in hand. But it's been really exciting getting to see everyone in the same place. Everyone is feeling very vulnerable. Everyone is nervous, but there's this alchemy that happens during rehearsals that you just don't get when you're alone with your play, looking at your screen. It's just like such a wonderful different dimension experiencing the rehearsal process.
Kind of anticipated what I was going to follow up with there, Tina, mentioning the alchemy of the rehearsal process. What for you so far has been the biggest revelation about your own show that being in rehearsal and seeing other people, bring it to life has caused?
Well, these collaborators are so talented, all of them, from the actors to the director to the design team. And yesterday we had the lighting designer, Zach, sitting with us. And we were talking about how to handle the, we have, I have birds in my play, lots of birds. So it's, and Zach was, and Zach and Bridget were talking about how to represent the bird. And I won't give it away, but it was wonderful, resourceful, inventive idea. And that's what I love about, like, the alchemy is me letting go and allowing these other artists to think and plan and kind of take the reins. And that is what I'm enjoying. What I'm learning is letting go and trusting the process.
Maggie, what about you? Any big revelations or surprises in your rehearsal process so far? You mentioned early on that you had some significant rewrites. What were you rewriting?
Sure. I think the first rehearsal, the first read through, I just heard a lot of circular conversation. A lot of this play is just the conversation around the question that is the title of the play, How to Not Save the World with Mr. Bezos. It's a bit of a confrontation with our friend Jeff. It felt like the characters were sort of going in and around this question without actually getting to the meat of it, without actually saying what each of them was feeling about the thing. And you, especially after doing so many rewrites in the past couple of months, and we, Tina and I, each had a workshop process over the summer, you kind of get lost in the sauce of, like, you just, the play just feels like it exists in pieces, and you can't really see them all together until there's people in front of you reading them out loud, and it can start to feel like the visual art form that both of our plays are, of it's a thing that exists in front of us and outside of us as people on a stage and not words on a page, is, its truest intended form. So Not necessarily surprising because that's just what the process is, but so valuable to, things that feel so clear the first week of rehearsal, seeing them in the room, that I couldn't ever have gotten to by myself, as Tina said, alone, writing in a dark corner. And then like the second week of rehearsal, they did a stumble through. And I realized that the first half of the play, the stakes just weren't clear. I think the second half of the play, the stakes become very clear as enough information is revealed that we all know what we're doing here. But the first half of the play, I was keeping so many secrets as the playwright that it wasn't clear why what was happening was important to both of these characters. So I've ended up revealing a lot more information earlier on to bring the audience along for the ride rather than holding all my secrets close to the vest. So that's been the biggest shift, yeah.
That's interesting. In some ways, it feels like once the actors got there, you transitioned somewhat into the role of the audience watching, and you realized in that role that you didn't have enough
Yeah,
information.
which I think is how Tina and I talked about this recently, where I said that when I write plays, I'm like imagining myself in the audience watching the play, which I think is because I'm a visual person. So I have to like imagine that I'm sitting in the theater and the lights go down. I'm like doing a whole mind palace thing. That's my journey as a playwright. And at some point things get so muddled that I have to like be in the rehearsal room to learn more. But Tina, you said you live in the minds of your characters.
Exactly. And it's so interesting when you discover that your process is not universal. It's like, yeah, other playwrights work in a different way. So I am inside my characters and I'm not visual at all. I'm not imagining them walking through the space. It's all very internal for me. So when I have the actors and they're actually moving around the stage and the director is placing them in different spots, it really changes the play. It's like, wait a minute, is this really boring? And I think what happens is you get to hear, like you were talking about talking, that there were these repetitions, right? And you don't really see, it's harder to see the repetitions on the page than it is to see it when it's being performed. That's when you're like, oh, we don't have to hear that a second time. So there's a clarity that happens in rehearsal that is just, I don't know, maybe some people don't have as hard a time getting that clarity, but for me, it's so important to see those actors moving. Yesterday, I was surprised at how sad I felt for Jane in this play. I don't think I felt that sad for her reading and writing it. And I was just, it took an actor to be playing Jane for me to really get that distance that you talk about, Maggie, when you're writing and seeing it from the audience. It was the first time I was like, no wonder Tony wants to be with Jane. She needs someone, and it was, it really struck me. It was like a lightning bolt moment. Because I'm in her head when I'm writing, not outside of her.
That is interesting, Tina, and interesting also because, as I mentioned in the intro, Jane is a re not, is a recurring character across multiple plays that you're working on, this trilogy and a series of plays. So I'm interested in that. Like, are the revelations or the things that you are learning and changing now, like, are you also thinking about how that impacts the other two plays? Particularly since Soft Star, I said, is the sort of the prequel, so chronologically it comes first. So I would assume that if things are messing around here, they're going to have ripples later on, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And so when I yesterday when I thought of Jane as like this very sympathetic character, it because Neighbor Jane, when we meet Neighbor Jane in my play, Neighbor Jane and State of Maine, those two plays happen within a month of each other. Neighbor Jane, when we meet her for the first time, is 73 years old. And this play is happening when Jane is 31, right? So it's going back to 1980. And it's the one friendship that was the most important to Jane. And she loses this friendship because of something she just can't help. You know, it's part of her DNA. And it's sort of what gets her in trouble. So many decades later, it's that same thing. So we get some insight, but I think seeing Jane so much younger gives me insight into what she could have been and what happened where that interfered with her being able to realize her potential. So I think that's why I see her as a more tragic figure looking back, seeing her with potential, which she no longer has, you know, later when she's 73. So it helps inform the whole trilogy, and it's been great for me to be working on it.
That's amazing. Maggie, popping back to you, as you've described, How to Not Save the World with Mr. Bezos is set in a kind of alternate now. And our friend Mr. Bezos has certainly been making the news in just the last couple of days, putting his finger on the scale and preventing an endorsement in the upcoming presidential election. And of course, billionaires, not just Bezos, have also been in the news as it relates to the election. And your show opens, you know, 2 or 3 days after the presidential election in November. So, I mean, I guess my question is, like, are you psychic? How did you know? but that's a dumb question. but you know, when you started writing, like, what was it about sort of the current climate in this country that like made you feel like, okay, yeah, I needed to be telling this story now? Which, of course, when you started writing was not now, but you know, then.
Sure. I mean, I only started writing this play less than a year ago, in class with Melinda Lopez, and thinking of it for this capstone production, because I knew that this play would have a smaller cast and sort of be producible in the realm of BPT. But this play for me comes from a place of like, I need to put my feelings about the American economy somewhere. So I've realized that my first drafts are like journal entries. So the first draft was like, this is how I feel about this. So, and then from there, it has become more character and conflict driven, and research driven. So I think it just came from a place of like, of things that a lot of people are feeling of, you know, financial pressures and financial frustrations. And why does that guy have $208 billion? And knowing why he has $208 billion, but why does he keep it? What's he doing with that? And genuinely wanting to get to the bottom and like trying to understand him. I think I process information much more easily when I am doing it in order to write a play. So I also just want to understand the guy, understand this person that I don't agree with and don't think I would ever be in that position or would respond differently if I were in that position. So that's where it came from. And it's also really be writing a play about a public figure that everyone knows a little bit about, is sort of like crowdsourcing research. So everyone I talk to about this play, not everyone, but a lot of people I talk to about this play will say something like, did you know that he, and then some weird fact about Bezos, which is so fun because there's just like so much more information than I could possibly include in the play, but everybody has a little tidbit about him. Which is just like it sparks delightful conversation, no matter what.
Amazing. All right, we're going to take a quick break to hear from this episode's sponsor. But when we come back, we're going to hear more from Maggie and Tina, and they're going to face off in a writing game. We'll be right back.
Are
Are you tired of walking down the grocery aisle and seeing row after row of the same uninspired fruity beverages, like sunshiny strawberry and mango madness? Do you want to add healthy protein to your diet without having to spend hours in the kitchen cooking and washing? Introducing the revolutionary new way to get your protein in a delicious and nutritious way, Meat Juice. Meat Juice is the first meat-infused sparkling beverage. Gone are the days of tame and light water options. It's time to feel full and energized, like you've just eaten a hot, juicy burger. Meat Juice is now available in 5 mouth-watering flavors. Breakin' Bacon, Totally Texas Barbecue, Bubbling Burger, Kickin' Chicken Wing, and our alcoholic specialty beverage, Cranberry Turkey Mojito. Each can of Meat Juice has 32 grams of real protein, so you can drink your meats on the go. So ditch the LaCroix and come party with the carnivores. Use one-time code cholesterol for a 20% discount off on your first drink, Meat Juice. It's nice to meet you.
Welcome back to Typecast. I'm joined today by Tina Esper and Maggie Kernan, the respective playwrights of our fall rep season, Soft Star, and How to Not Save the World with Mr. Bezos. As I just mentioned, we are presenting your plays in rep, meaning that the plays have a shared set, scenic and lighting designers, and an overlapping schedule. Tell me a bit about how that process has impacted your creative journey, maybe, with getting these plays on stage. Have you done a rep process before? Have you shared resources with designers? Like, you know, be honest. You can, maybe some things were terrible about it. It's the first time we're doing it actually here at BPT, so we're all learning. How's it been? What have you discovered?
Well, it's great to have the other person in rep be someone that I know well and that I trust, whose work I know, and you know, so it's almost like a buddy. You know, your play buddy. Maggie is my play buddy. I'm safe. I'm safer with Maggie there. And knowing that we're sharing these creative teams and the set, it's good. You know, it's something that brings us, I guess, closer together. I like pulling Maggie aside and saying, hey, how's it going? It's happening at the same time. We can share some of that stress. And if we want to kvetch, we get to. So it's, and I don't know, I think it's good to be knowing that Maggie's going through the process maybe 1 week earlier than me, but I can ask her how it's going. And it helps me feel a little bit less frantic, like, oh, okay, that's also happening to you. And you got through it. That means I'm going to get through it. And so it feels like a family event. You know, our cohort is very tight. So it's working for me in a really positive way.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It's so nice to have a buddy. I think otherwise, as a playwright in process, it can feel kind of isolating because you're receiving information and feedback from all kinds of different sources. And then you go home and it's just on you to solve those problems. But yeah, to have Tina going through the same roller coaster of emotions is really lovely. And the bustle at BPT right now is so like invigorating. I say that as someone who can easily leave the building, but I don't know. There was just one day a week or two ago where it was like the first day of Soft Star rehearsal and both plays were in rehearsal and technicians were building and every room was in use and class was happening. And I was like, ooh, BPT is alive. So that was exciting. Yeah. I think the designers are so excited to be taking on the challenge, you know, as not a full-time designer, I thought it might be like an intimidating prospect, and maybe it was that too. But for the most part, they were just like, wow, we can't wait to figure out how both of these plays work together in the same kind of world. And just from a producibility aspect and an environmental aspect, being able to put both, you know, pool resources towards both of these plays feels like a really positive, sustainable way to move forward in the environment of this industry.
You talked about how you've been leaning on each other, I guess maybe in a sort of emotional way or a pick-me-up way. Have you guys had any like creative conversations around like, hey, how's this set working for you? Or, or I'm having this problem. What are you guys doing? Like, is there any of that happening?
I haven't really faced any of the problems yet. Maybe I will, but I'm also respecting that that's somebody else's area. And so far, it seems to be working well. I'm enjoying watching Bridget and the actors kind of figure things out and solve problems, which they'd be doing even if it wasn't a set in rep, right? So I haven't dealt with any restrictions or shortcomings. It just, for me, it has only felt positive. I also agree with Maggie. I like knowing that there's like this energy. It feels like a community. It feels like more of a community knowing that there are two playwrights at work, working simultaneously, instead of feeling like the only playwright. It's good to know that you have your buddy there, and you can always reach out. And I don't know, Maggie, if you're having any feeling any constraints with the set.
No, I was going to say I also have so much trust in our production teams, and in our directing teams and stage management teams that I don't, it feels like we are given all the freedom to just to quote unquote just be the playwright and to not have to worry about those things and know that everything will fall into place. And how important that collaboration is for the whole theatrical process, too. But Tina and I have our weekly meetings with department head Nathan Allen Davis. So we're also able to, like, if there's anything stressing us out where we're like, we know this isn't a problem and we trust everyone to fix it, but I'm feeling this way about this right now. We have a safe space to do that, which I think is also just valuable and necessary.
Yes, love that. I'm chuckling because I was on the receiving end of an email from Nathan saying, "Hey, can we find a space for playwrights that's quiet that they can write, where they won't be disturbed during the process or rehearsal?" I'm like, "Oh, that came out of that." They were talking about that with Nathan. So that is yes, very good. Glad to be responsive in
Thank you. Thank you,
that way.
Darren.
You're both third year MFA candidates here at BU and BPT. This is your last big project here before you graduate. What scares you the most about launching into the professional theater world? And just a preview, I am going to follow that up with what excites you the most, so it's not all about scary, even though it's, Halloween season.
I think I'm most scared about losing momentum, which ties in with time. So I think the most beautiful thing about the program for me has been the most important thing every day that I have to do is read and write plays. And as soon as the program is over, that goes away. That goes away. I mean, whatever. We could say existentially that the most important thing that I have to do every day, whatever. But that. Yeah, I worry that, life will come in with its complications and other priorities, and that I will just not maintain the momentum that I feel right now. So that's my biggest fear is how do we keep the ball rolling?
Yeah, and Maggie, what I fear is losing the community that we have here, which is a reminder of what to prioritize every day. We know that we're playwrights here. We support each other. We have this fantastic cohort. And once we're off in different directions, how do we establish that sort of feeling of community in a new place or with new people? We have lots of plans to stay in touch. I think community is so important. to staying on track and to maintaining momentum. And so my biggest fear is, like you were saying, how do you maintain that momentum without the things that are in place now here in this program? But so yeah, that's my big fear.
All right, well, what about your big excitement, Tino? What are you excited to launch into once you're
Well,
gone from
back
here?
to the momentum Maggie was talking about, I feel like we have been building momentum in this program. And now it's like, watch out, world. We've got this momentum and we're ready to like show it off. So I feel the excitement of, hey, I've really learned something and I'm more excited than ever to share it with people. And one of the things that I've gained is a level of confidence that is going to work for me in getting out there and introducing myself to different companies and different people. And I can talk about my work in a way that I hadn't been able to talk about before. So I think that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I'm gonna co-sign confidence and how to talk about my work, which it's not, you know, it's not just developing the work, it's how to talk about it with people who ask, well, what's your next play? Or how to talk about it with actors in the room, with confidence instead of a place of, I don't know, what do you think? Which I feel like I entered the program with, and of course that is still valuable in certain settings, but yeah, this I think we also have just we've written so many plays here, and we know how to write the next ones, and we've got the next five lined up in the backseat of our brains, and I'm excited to keep developing those and keep writing and sending out my work and knowing how to write about it and how to talk about it. I don't know. It's I think it's all the unknown of what happens next is as exciting as it is scary, I would say.
Why do you think new plays matter these days?
Well, I'm going to talk about Maggie's play in this to answer your question. You know, I think new plays are able to detect that thing in the air, right? And Maggie's play, for example, has been able to channel this new rise of dictatorship in our country, which is like, who are the dictators in our world these days? It's like the Jeff Bezos, the Elon Musks. And a threat that maybe we couldn't really imagine 5 years ago. So, for Maggie to be writing a play that's boldly imagining a world where there is a real threat in people who are so overtly and tremendously wealthy and who wield so much power across the board, politically and otherwise. If are there plays that really address it in such a direct way? I think new plays are able to reflect back what's sort of happening, what's starting to form. That's not maybe not even fully articulated, right? So, and that's why if you want daring and timely and visionary, you have to look to new plays.
I, in a green room conversation last week, made the big bold statement that all theater should be new theater, which fundamentally I don't actually believe, but because there's so much to learn from plays of the past. But I the energy of that is exactly what Tina is saying of just the theater is so now, like that is the point of it. What are we all going through? What do we all need to process collectively? My play deals a lot with just catharsis of like, what do we need to process? What do we need to understand? What do we need to talk about? What do we need to spark conversation about. And even Tina's play does that, even though it takes place in the 80s, is sparking conversation about, issues that women are still dealing with that are still talked about the same way, even though it's 2024 and not 1980. But I think that the now of theater is why new theater will always be necessary. We always have something else that we as a human race in shared collective experience need to process together in a room in a room where we're sharing space and air with the performers in front of us as well, and exchanging energy between audience and performer and writer and designer and director. Yeah, I guess that's it. It's just we all deserve in present day processing together and shared experience.
All right, well, you've run the gauntlet of questions, but now it gets more difficult because it's time for the game. Today we're going to see how well our playwrights know their own plays. Maggie and Tina, I'm going to read you three lines from your plays, some of which have been slightly altered. And your job is to identify whether this is an actual line in your play or an altered line in your play that you're working on right now in rehearsal. So, here we go. No time like the present. We're going to start with you, Maggie, the line from Bezos, or is it a line from Bezos? Here it is. Oh, and I should I'll mention here, if you have children listening to this podcast, cover their ears for a quick second. Here's the line. Because if you're going to make me out to be your weird pseudo bonus daughter with the woman you fucked over, I want you to be a little hard and very confused when you think about me. Is that a real line from your play, or did I change something?
That is a real line from my play, and we cut a sentence in the middle of it. You can't fool me.
So it was a real line when it was a real line when I made it, and it's so the process is so up to date, it's actually already changed. That's amazing. All right, that's ding. Ding ding ding. That is a point for Maggie. All right, Tina, here's yours. He better come through with that monopoly or game night's a bust.
Wrong.
No, what is it?
It's Twister.
It is Twister. That is correct. It is not Monopoly. It is Twister. All right, ding, ding, ding. That's another one for Tina, or it's 1-1. All right, Maggie. Here's your next one. We didn't vote for you. We voted for convenience and the marvelous Mrs. Maisel and
We did
time,
not vote for
which we
Marvelous
don't
Mrs.
have
Maisel. We
because
voted for
capitalism is
customer
draining us.
reviews.
Oh my God, you identified it as wrong and you know what the actual line is. That ding ding ding. That is a you've got a steel trap up there. You've got it. All right. Tina, here's yours. Can you keep up?
Don't know.
Here it is. I couldn't wait for Dick to go to this welders convention so I could turn the heat up to 66.
Correct.
It's a real line.
It's
Yes.
a real line.
Ding, ding, ding.
I haven't cut it.
That line, it does actually bring me back to my own childhood in the 80s and my dad always keeping the heat super low.
Yeah.
And
Oil
my mom was
shortage,
always
baby.
freezing. Totally. That one rings true to my experience for sure. Okay, Maggie, here you go. Last one. Man, what I could buy with $100 billion.
Okay,
11
this one's
Boston
tricky because
universities.
that used to be a line in the play. But right now,
We
it's
tried to
Costa
fool
Rica.
you. We
You
tried
can
to
buy
fool you, but you
Costa
caught it.
Rica
What is it
with
now?
$100 billion.
What is it now? Costa Rica.
You can't get me.
This was the crap. This was a little bait and switch we tried on you, but it did not work. Ding, ding, ding. You win. All right, last one. Last one. If you get this one, Tina, it's going to be a tie, which means, of course, you both win. Here it is. I read a story about a Swiss lady who got pregnant with twins from two different guys. So what do you say? Let's go for a second one?
Okay, the Swiss do not do that. The French do that. Okay.
That is correct. The real line is a story about a French lady, not a Swiss lady. Wow. Okay. Well, we tried to pull the rug out from under you, but the two of you, damn, too good. Too good. You know these plays.
We know it.
All right. Last question. As we finish up here, well done. Two winners on the game. But as you've talked about throughout this podcast, you've been classmates for about 2.5 years now. You are rep buddies in this fall process. You know each other's work. So, Maggie, why
Nobody
should people
does
come see Soft Star?
interpersonal heartbreak like Tina Esper. Her characters are all just, they're all aching. And I ache listening to them speak, and I can't wait to see them on stage, aching together. We're all just at the her language is so poetic and lovely. And she's got secrets, and she's got magic, and she's got birds, and yeah, I think there you can see a little bit. Everyone will see a little bit of a relationship in their life in Soft Star for sure. Thank
Aching
you,
characters.
Maggie.
Sounds a little like Eugene O'Neill. Tina, why should people come see Maggie's play?
Well, it is daring, bold, timely. They will be taken on a real ride. There will be things that are going to be happening in the theater that I don't know if they've ever experienced in a theater before. It's sort of going to be something that will raise the little hairs on the back of their neck. I'm just very, very excited. Maggie is taking on a very important subject, and there's humor, there is blood, and there is just a, it's a, going to be a really wild ride. I want to be in the front row.
Me too. If you want to be in the front row at these plays, How to Not Save the World with Mr. Bezos opens on November 7th. That's our first preview, which is pay what you can, pay what you want. So come for free if you want. Soft Star comes a week later on November 14th. Both of them run in rep through November 24th only. So, get yourself to bostonplaywrights.org, our newly redesigned website. Get your tickets right now. These are going to be two amazing plays. I should also mention, because we're presenting them in rep, there is a great deal to see both plays. You've heard from our both playwrights today. What an interesting conversation to have to see both of these plays in the same space. Two very different plays, very different subjects in the same place. So go to the website. You can check out how to get tickets and how to get that special rep deal right now. That was bostonplaywrights.org. See you in the theater.
Today's episode was researched, written, and edited by our student producer, Lauren Grill. Lauren also devised this episode's parody commercial. Our theme music is Off to Osaka, and the final credits music is Malt Shop Bop, both by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his incredibly wide-ranging music at incompetech.com. That's incompetech.com. For more information about Boston Playwrights Theater, including our season of new plays, visit our newly relaunched website, bostonplaywrights.org.